Hello, everybody. This is Robert Sigliano, and welcome to Episode 7 of the New Pilot Podblog, Monica Petrillo's flight around Australia and her DVD flyabout. For this episode, I'm doing things a little bit different. I have invited Monica Petrillo into the virtual hangar to talk about her documentary film, Flyabout. Flyabout is an inspirational and beautiful film about Monica's flight around Australia with her father, brother, and her father's wife. It's not a travelogue. It's more than that. It's her personal journey as she grows from a young woman into adulthood. It's about her conflict with her father because she is the more experienced pilot. It's about the shifting of generations. For the pilot and aviation lover, there is a lot of flying in this film. You follow her flights around Australia, you see the beautiful scenery, the wildlife, and the people she meets along the way. You see her deal with formation flying, IMC weather, dirt runways, and extreme crosswind landings. You get to see Monica grow as a pilot. This is a must-see movie, and has a spot on my shelf right next to 16th Right. Monica, welcome to the New Pilot Podblog. I really appreciate you coming aboard and talking to me, and as Will and Dave will say, the virtual hangar.
Thank you.
Well, you are the director, writer, producer, editor, and camera person of a, to me, an outstanding documentary called Flyabout about your trip around Australia. And I just want to let you know, I've already watched it twice.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did.
Yeah, and I really enjoy it. It shares a spot on my shelf with 16th Right, two of my favorite aviation movies now.
Oh, great. Oh, that's a compliment. Thank you. I'm glad you liked it that much.
When you took off for your flight to Australia, you were a relatively low time pilot, right? You had about 140 hours?
Yeah, you get that right. Yeah, I had pretty much just gotten my license and then, you know, had the chance to fly around LA a little bit, but I certainly had done nothing of that scope at all, or that challenge. It was quite a different story to fly around there. And for 4 weeks, you know, we flew every single day, pretty much.
You know, when I first started with my, when I was getting my private pilot's license, I really struggled with really how to use my license. And since I've gotten my license, I've sort of put together a plan of what I want to accomplish on each flight and what I want to do, you know, the typical $100 hamburgers, the sightseeing tours. But I tell you one thing, flying around a continent never, ever entered in my mind. How did that come about? Why Australia?
Well, it's a long story, and some of which is obviously covered in the movie, right. But the Australia part, Australia was a country that I had always wanted to visit. I grew up in Germany, and my dad and I, we always traveled a lot. We had traveled to Africa and certainly all around Europe and America and so forth. But we always both said, one day we want to visit Australia. It just seems like a really unique and beautiful place. And my dad, being as efficient as he is and German, he said, well, if you go to Australia, you have to at least have, you know, a month's worth of time or 6 months to travel around, because otherwise you end up just seeing the East Coast because it's so huge. And it doesn't make sense just to see the East Coast. You really want to get to the Northern Coast and the West Coast and the Outback, because that's really the beautiful part. So when we, years later, when we both got our pilot's license, we revisited that plan and we said, hey, maybe we should think about going to Australia again now, because now we can cover these great distances with an airplane. We just have to figure out how to make it happen. And so we started looking into renting planes there, but that was pretty complicated. And then my flight instructor saw an ad for Goanna Air Safaris in a flying magazine and said, isn't this what you want to do? It's sort of an air safari, and they provide the planes and so forth. And that, my dad and I right away said, that's it. We want to totally, that's what we want to do. And so we booked the trip, and they had they offered different tours. They had a tour that just went for 1 week around the East Coast, and then one that went 2 weeks to Ayers Rock and back. And then we signed up for the 4 week trip, which went around the circumference of the continent.
That is so cool. One thing you mentioned in the movie that you said you were going to put on about 70 hours for the whole trip. How many hours did you actually put on, put into your logbook?
I think it was 72. It was right around that number, which was about 50% of the hours I had up until then. So I can tell you that by the time we were done with that trip, I was a much more confident pilot than going over there, for sure.
I can tell. The one thing I liked about the documentary, the movie, is that, you know, it was a movie of your journey, right? It wasn't just a travel log that you can watch on PBS on Saturday morning. The scenes of Australia from the air were absolutely breathtaking. It was the outback, the desert, you know, the wildlife was absolutely beautiful. But one thing I really enjoyed was not only it looked like your growth as a pilot and as a person. You talk about, I think at the end, you talk about how you went from a young girl to an adult, how your relationship with your father changed. I even noticed there was a change in your brother throughout the movie. You know, he started off, like you said, this quiet kid, then he goes bungee jumping, he plays that instrument, that Australian instrument, I forget what it's called, and then by the end, he's wearing a hat, he's playing the instrument. It just like it was a journey for you and your whole family through the whole trip.
Yeah, thank you. That was a really good observation on your part. I totally agree. At first, my brother was more quiet and maybe introverted, and he definitely grew into his own over there. And in fact, you know, it's nice to mention that a year later, after we did this, my brother returned to Australia and spent 6 months driving around the continent by himself.
You know, that's really funny because I was going to actually ask you that question because it looked like he was having so much fun and he really connected with the people and the country, and you know, that I was wondering if he ever went back, or if you or your father has gone back, or your father's wife has gone back to Australia since then.
Just my brother has so far. I very much want to go back and hope to go back with my own family now. You know, I have two kids, they're 4 and 6, and they're pretty much almost old enough to go on a trip like that, and I definitely want to show them the country. It's just so beautiful. It's sort of what I imagine America was like maybe a couple hundred years ago.
It must be great. Wide open spaces and no air traffic controllers, right?
No. I mean, there are some on the East Coast, but once you leave, you know, once you get more further west, there's just not enough traffic and not enough airports to make, you know, to have much need for air traffic control. When you get to an airport like Catherine, which is a military airport, then certainly they have air traffic control and you have to call 20 miles out, etc. But for the most part, or when you go to places like Mount Howard Station, that little place in the middle of nowhere with the guys had his own runway.
That's where Taffy was, right?
Taffy. Right. Which is also something I always like to share with people after seeing the movie, and that is that he's actually married now.
Oh, really?
So it's one of my favorite things to share because he was in the movie, you know, he was so alone and lonely and seemed like, if anything, he was going to move further away. And
right, right. You had asked him where would he go after this, and he said just deeper into the wilderness, away from everybody.
More remote. And I was like, how could you get any more remote than this?
Exactly, with a bunch of dingoes, exactly.
Yeah, but I contacted him a few years ago because I had to get his permission to be in the film, and his wife responded to my email, and I was like, oh my God, you're married, that's awesome. So he found somebody who shared the appreciation for that place and works with him.
You know, one thing also, you're talking about the growth, your growth as a person in the movie, and your relationship with your father and whatever, but your growth as a pilot. You started off, the first scene in the movie, you started off talking about how you're about to do something that you felt was wrong, and you did it anyway, and you held back discussing it with the other pilots because you had 140 hours when the other pilots that you were sharing with the trip with had 1,000, 2,000 hours, and Mal, I guess, had God only knows how many hours. But to me, that spoke to being a new pilot.
I was definitely, like, by far the youngest, and I was also the only woman pilot in the group. So, I didn't feel like... I mean, I had some part of me inside that was doubtful, but I felt like, well, if they all feel we can make it, then I guess probably we can. It's a tough decision, and ultimately, yeah, I think it all comes down to confidence. And nowadays, I would probably speak up if I was really concerned, because you gain a different level of confidence after having gone through a trip like that, and B, something changes when you have your own kids.
You said you might have listened to one or two of my podcasts, but I talk about taking up my son, my youngest son, who's 14 years old, and he's really enjoying flying. And like you said, you gain a different perspective on flying. You're maybe a little bit more careful. You check the weather a little bit more. You plan things a little bit better. I could see how from that time to now with the kids, and also what you've learned through the flying, you've been through the bad weather. You've been through the ceiling dropping to 700 feet, the big cross, you know, the really strong crosswind landings. You've lived it all. What you've done in those 4 weeks, you've experienced, you know, more than most pilots will experience in 4 years or even 40 years.
Yeah, I was really lucky to have that time. I mean, by going through all these different experiences in such a short time, it really sinks in, you know, it really sticks with you. Whereas most of us pilots only get to fly once every 2 weeks or once a month. And by the time you go up next time, you've forgotten half of what you did last time. So having it, this everyday flying experience really, really made a big difference for me and for my just confidence and sort of, I know that at the end of this flying trip around Australia, I got to a place where I felt, and this might sound a little corny, but I got to a place where I felt the plane rather than to think what the plane was doing. Like I would still look at my airspeed on landing and stuff like that, but I could sort of hear if I was going too slow or too fast. I could feel the plane if it was, you know, it just became more of a, it's like when you drive a car, you know, you drive a car every day and you don't think about when you shift from second to third gear anymore. You just do it. You just hear when it's the right time to shift. And so I got to that place where it became really second nature to me. And that was wonderful. It was like, that's when I really felt like I was one with the plane or I was riding a bicycle through the air, you know?
Right. Well, I think we all aspire to get to that point. And being a renter that I am, and most pilots are, I don't think you really ever get to that point. I try to fly the same plane all the time, even if there's multiple of the same make and models, just to try to get that up to that point. But it's difficult renting a plane or flying, like you said, every other week or once a month or whatever. And I sort of got that sense that you were one with the plane, because at the end, spoken like a true pilot, you said that you were going to really miss the people, really miss the country, but you also said you were really going to miss the plane. From that statement, I knew that you became one with the plane. It was, you were part of the plane, and the plane was part of you.
Yeah, it really felt like that. I mean, it's funny, I had a guy who bought my DVD from my website, and I always write little notes and say, please let me know what you think. And so he wrote me an email back, and he said, it was so nice to see VHITY, you know, up in the air and live that dream. And at first I didn't get it, and then I read on and I realized that the guy had flown the very same plane.
Oh, wow.
On a different Goanna Air Safari tour some 3-4 years later or something. And he sent me some photos of the same plane but painted in different colors from when he was flying it. And it was really neat to hear. It was like hearing from an old friend, you know.
Right. It's amazing how we all connect to planes. You know, whenever I see the planes I first started training in, or the plane I soloed in, or the plane I got my private pilot's license in, you know, it means something. It's like an old friend. You really do connect, and that's one of the great things about flying. It's the joy that you get and connecting, you know, with the plane, connecting with the people that in the community.
Yes, for sure.
Do you still keep in contact with the 7 people that you took the trip with?
I do, and I am, absolutely. I'm glad you asked, because that's something worth mentioning too. I'm in some contact with all of them, at least by email. The one couple lives in Germany, so I just hear from them occasionally. But the other couple, they live in San Diego, and in fact, I just had an exchange with them last week, because they might come up for one of my flyabout screenings on February 25th here in Torrance. And the other guy, Elliot, the one who you see him in the beginning, and he tells me how many hours he has in the kind of slightly bigger guy with his I've seen him a lot. He lives in Boston, but he flies out to Oshkosh every year, and he was the one, when I called him and I said, my film is showing in Oshkosh, he was so excited. He said, okay, Monica, here's what you're going to do. You're going to fly yourself into Chicago. I'll pick you up, and then you're going to come with us to this place in Rockford, Illinois, where we meet every year with the Bonanzas to Oshkosh. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're that group that fly in formation into Oshkosh every year.
Yep.
And Elliot, was the guy. He led that group for many years. He was the leader of...
Really?
Yeah, and so he said, you have to fly with us, because that's the way to travel to Oshkosh, and then you have to camp with us, because that's the way to experience Oshkosh. So that's what I did. For the last 2 years, I went and met them and flew as part of the formation. I mean, I was in the right seat, but I flew with them into Oshkosh and then camped with them in the North 40 lot, and I've had such a great time hanging out with those guys. They're such a great bunch of people, and... so yes, I'm definitely in contact with all of them, and
that's great.
And forever, I think forever friends. And of course, my dad and my brother is actually visiting me right now from Germany, and he has a kid now too. Believe it or not.
Has he ever thought about getting his pilot's license? I know how expensive it is over there in Europe, and is pretty prohibitive. And listening to your talk with Will and Dave, you discuss how your father had to come over to stay with you in order to get his private pilot's license. But has your brother ever shown interest in getting his?
You know, he has never shown any interest in flying airplanes, but he has chosen a couple of years ago to jump out of them. So
fantastic.
So he's a skydiver and has done that for some 7-8 years now, I believe.
Oh, that's great.
So that's his
connection to aviation.
Yeah, exactly. I guess he's an aviator of some sort.
I have done one jump and absolutely love it. And you know, you talk to pilots and say, why jumping out of a perfectly good airplane? But the way I look at it, any chance to be in, around, or near an airplane is good enough for me. The more I'm around planes and aviation, the better.
Better, yeah. I have to agree with you. There's something a little bit odd about jumping out of a plane. I did it once, actually, during that same visit in Australia. My brother and I stayed for an extra 4 weeks and just drove around a little bit. And that's when I did one of those tandem jumps once. And I remember I was sitting on the edge of that Cessna, looking out and thinking, like, am I really jumping out of this airplane? It's crazy. But and it was overcast that day, so I was looking down onto a bed of clouds, and for some reason in that moment I felt like, well, it looks pretty soft.
Yeah.
You know, how hard can I possibly land? So I just jumped into the clouds and through the clouds, and it was pretty exhilarating, I have to admit. But I still prefer staying in the plane.
Oh, yeah, I prefer flying the plane than jumping out of a plane, without a doubt. Speaking of Oshkosh, are you going to be there this year?
I think I'm going to try to go again this year. I my husband has been nice enough to let me go and play for the past years, and if I'm nice, he'll let me go one more time. But Yeah, I'm planning on it at this point. But you?
Yeah, I'm planning for my first trip.
Your first time?
Yeah, my first time.
Oh, wow.
My first time, yeah. Both my boys, my 20-year-old and my 14-year-old, who's going to be 15 at the time, have decided that they want to come with me. So that'll be fun, and we're planning a camp as well.
Oh, great. Excellent. Excellent. You're going to love it. It's so amazing. And you can't really describe it. I mean, as much as you try to describe it, you're not going to do it justice. It's just incredible.
That's what I hear. You know, everybody says you should at least camp once there to really be immersed and be part of it. And what's better than sharing campsite with pilots and aviation junkies, right?
Yeah, it's like a whole town. It's huge. And are you boys into aviation?
My oldest, not really, not so much. My youngest, who I took up flying for the first time in November, and I talk about it on the podcast, who now wants to be a pilot.
All right.
So, of course, I'm very happy about that and encouraging him, but not pushing him too much. I don't want to, you know, how teenagers are, you know, they don't listen to their parents, and, you know, I don't want to push him too much, and, you know, we'll see where it goes. If anything, I have a flying partner, somebody who's willing to go flying with me, to share it with me.
If he hears this podcast, I want to tell him that he's incredibly lucky to have a dad who supports his idea of flying. I mean, what? How lucky is that?
Yeah, and my wife fully supports it. She is absolutely thrilled about it because she feels that this is a way for him to maybe find a direction in life, to be focused on something, maybe help him in school. And, you know, whether he becomes a pilot or not, maybe it opens up some other doors in the aviation field or other fields as well. Maybe it'll get his focus going. And she's thrilled about that. She's very supportive of me flying, very supportive of me flying, taking my son up. And now, hopefully, you know, she's very supportive of my son, hopefully one day pursuing his private pilot's license.
That's awesome.
One thing I wanted to ask you about the film. You constantly bring up the theme of a walkabout. And the movie obviously is called Flyabout. So there must be some connection between the two.
Sure. Well, I think you know, to tell you the truth, when I plan to document this whole experience and I bought the camera and I just took it with me, I didn't really know too much about how to make a documentary film, and I just went and decided to film whatever, everything that came before my eyes. But then somebody said to me, "Look, you should really have a plan, even though you might divert from your plan. But the best films always start out with some kind of intention, because you can tell that, and then you're not so randomly, you know, looking around." And so I had done a little research and watched some other films about Australia, and I heard about this walkabout, and it sounded really intriguing to me. And I thought, how great would it be if I have an experience like that? And so I kind of made that my goal, and I thought, I'm going to go down there, and I'm going to go on this experience, and I'm going to have this great spiritual revelation, and it'll be amazing. Well, problem was, the trip was so demanding and challenging and stressful and time-consuming that there was very little, you know. I kept waiting for this thing to happen, and I meanwhile I was much too busy trying to keep the plane in the air and keeping track of my arguments with my dad and what have you, that there was really very little time for that. And so then I thought, oh well, I guess if I didn't have that spiritual moment, then maybe I don't have a movie. I don't have a story to tell here. And I was all devastated. This is afterwards, when after I'd come home, and that's when another wise friend of mine said to me, "You know, Monica, we don't always find what we're looking for in life, but we find something else. You just have to think about it." I'm sure he said, "I'm sure you learned something on that trip. You just have to figure out what that is." And so it took a couple of years after coming back, sorting through my footage and sorting through my thoughts and realizing that, in a way, I had my own walkabout slash flyabout experience. I had learned a lot about myself. I had learned about redefining the relationship with my father, and I'd learned that sometimes you can't force these things. Sometimes you just have to look out the window and take the time to enjoy the small things in life, and don't try so hard. You know, there's that one scene where I was filming the sunset from all these different angles, and afterwards I realized, look, I didn't even really stop to enjoy the sunset.
My wife really got a good chuckle about that scene. I have a digital camera. I love to take pictures. You know, I'll take hundreds of pictures at a birthday party. My wife is always telling me that I'm missing everything because I'm looking at everything through a lens. She turned to me and she said, see, you know, you have to stop and look sometimes. Stop taking so many pictures.
Yeah. It's tricky, you know, when you're trying to make a movie, so you want to film everything, but get to the point where you don't live it anymore, you know, you don't enjoy the moment, and that's something to constantly keep an eye on. But to answer your question, in the end, I really feel like I had my flight out. I did go on this journey, and even though I think for everyone, walkabout is just a different word, you know, the Indians call it their vision quest, and for Catholics, it's going to church on Sundays or whatever. It's like, I think for everyone, it's something different, and for me, to be up in that plane and to have looked down on the incredibly vibrant colors of Australia and to have worked through the differences and with my dad, that really was a huge growing experience. And so in many ways, that was my way of going walkabout. So
what I took away from the movie, you know, about your walkabout, your revelations, there was really two. There was a couple of scenes, like the one scene where you said about the sunset, where you really didn't stop and smell the roses, per se. There was another scene where you said you were filming, I think maybe it was Jerry, I can't remember, his landing, and you said you realize that maybe a walkabout is you just strip everything away, and all it is yourself that's left. But also, you talk about how your father, when you were younger, talk about that when he had to work something out in his head, he would go on a walkabout. He would walk around to...
How did you pick up on that? I didn't drive that point home too hard, but I'm glad you picked up on that. Yes, I think in many ways that was him doing the same thing. That's what the Aborigines do, you know. I think in many ways he was going walkabout without knowing it.
Right. And the other line that you say in the movie that I think also talks about this is that, and this is really the theme I took away from the movie, is you said your godfather talked about the shift of generations. And I saw that, how you changed in the movie. And I think you really captured that well. And it was very subtle. But if you watch the movie and you pay attention, you actually see the changes in you and in your family throughout the whole movie. And at the end, in the shifting of generations, you're the pilot and your father is your father. And he's always right because he's your father. And right? And
yeah.
It was that shifting of generations, and I really think that you really portrayed that very well in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I when people ask me about my film and say, like, oh, is this just a movie for pilots, I would say anybody who, you might like it if you're a pilot, or if you always wanted to visit Australia, or if you have a dad, because everyone has a dad. And really, I think anybody who has a dad can relate to that dynamic in that situation. And in fact, you know, now, like I said, I have two kids myself now, and pretty soon it'll be my turn to be in his shoes. And I said to him, I don't know if you've heard, on March 8th there's a group of people who are celebrating the centennial of flight for women. That was that's the 100-year anniversary for the first woman getting a pilot's license.
Yeah,
it's on March 8th, and they're trying to break a world record by having the most women introduced to flight on that day. And I decided to make that the decision to take my own daughter flying for the first time on that day. She's 6 years old, and she's been bugging me ever since she understood and realized and clocked the fact that I'm a pilot. She asked me to take her up flying, and I've been hesitating so far because she's so young, you know, she's only six, but I guess it's time to introduce her to flying, and I realized that makes me the older generation now. So I said to my dad, I said, you know, so if if I get into some trouble and she wants to take the wheel from me, you know, can you give me some advice on how to deal with that? And he just laughed and he said, no, my dear, that one you're going to have to deal with by yourself.
Yes, yeah, little payback, right?
Yes, exactly. But things with my dad are really great, and that's always good to tell people, too, that this was 11 years ago that we went on the trip, and a lot has happened since then, and we had, you know, it took a couple of months to write some letters back and forth and really put our feelings out and reach out towards each other to understand each other, but we are fully back to where we were before, if not closer, and so that's a good thing.
That's great. As they always say, you're looking back, you start forgetting about the pain and or the problems, and you really start focusing on, you remember the good times.
Right, yeah. I think by now we're both able, it's fair to say we're both able to embrace the experience for what it was and to just think of it, you know, favorably.
This podcast is about my journey as a new pilot and what I'm learning and how I'm growing as a pilot. So I have a couple of questions about that with you. Of the 140 hours that you said you had, I'm assuming, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that was total hours, right, at the time?
That's total hours, yes.
How many hours of those 140 were hours after you got your private pilot's license?
I think I went for my, if I remember correctly, I think I went for my check ride at, like, 54 hours, so.
So you had a little under 100.
90, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I can't imagine flying around a continent after 90 hours of having my private pilot's license.
You know, there's something when you're, I was 28 when I did it, and like I said, there's something that happens once you have kids. Like, I would be much more hesitant to do it now than I was then, but you don't, when you're young, you don't think about it so hard. You just do it. You want to do it, and you do it.
Right, it's an adventure.
Yeah.
What type of preparations did you do on a daily basis for each flight, for each hop, or each next destination?
That's a good question. You know, we had a big 3-hour briefing before we left Brisbane that sort of laid out the overall plan for everything. But then we also had a briefing, I think we had a briefing every morning before we took off, or maybe the night before, where we looked at the map together, we discussed, Mal would go through all the different challenges or the different, you know, he would say like, okay, and then our plan is, here are our waypoints, and this is where we land and to refuel, and then when you come to Kananara, make sure you call them before. So we kind of went through the whole plan of the day. And then, you know, we got gas, we got when we needed to, and that was about it in terms of preparations. You know, the good thing with this was that Mal was planning everything.
Right.
And just passing on the information to us. So we didn't have to, you know, he checked the weather for us. He would come to breakfast having the weather report in his hand and tell it to us. So he would do all those things for us, and then just, so that made it a little easier, I think.
Did you navigate? How did you navigate? Was it just basically following the other planes, or did you VOR, or?
We had maps and, you know, detailed like sectional charts and that sort of thing, and we did. Each plane had a GPS, although I have to say when I first got there, I had no idea how to read a GPS. Nowadays, everybody has a GPS in their watch, and
right.
You know, like my 6-year-old can read a GPS, but back then, that wasn't the case, and it would have really helped me if I had learned about using that before that first time we went into IFR conditions, because it would have really helped me to find an airport, and I always thought GPS is just for IFR pilots, but believe me, after that first time that happened, I learned very quickly how to use a GPS, and was able to use it subsequently for the rest of the trip, and that was really great, because it then allowed you to, you know, you had the maps, but then you also had the GPS that would tell you, you know, 46 miles out of before getting to Port Hedland or something, or you're 3 miles east of there or so forth. And it would also help us to talk to each other, the 5 planes. We had our own frequency that was just our frequency, and we would talk to each other and And so, like, oh, I'm 23 miles before Catherine or something. And the other one was like, oh, I'm 22.5 miles. So let me see. Where are you? What's your altitude? And then we're like, oh, there, I can see you now. You know, so it was, it helped us find each other in the sky a little bit, too.
Yeah, the scenes where you were the other planes in the air with you, you know, the formation flying, I'm telling you, they look real close. How close were they to you? And you never did formation flying beforehand, right?
No, I didn't. And as I said in the movie, at first that really scared me. You know, the first time Mal just showed up, he would call me on the radio and was like, hey, so, how you doing? And I'd say, like, where are you? And he said, I'm on your left wingtip. And I looked over and, oh my God, there he was. So I got really, at first I was quite nervous about that. But then Elliot, who I told you leads the Bonanzas to Oshkosh, he has a good amount of training in formation flying, and he shared some with me and said, you know, you want to always make sure that you don't, you know, you look at the other wingtip and you stay. It's actually easier when you're closer, because then you're just flying visually by looking out the window and sort of finding a point of reference, and then always staying a little below and a little to the side of the other plane. And so the other guys, they took some of my fear by explaining some of those things with me, by the end, I thought I was thrilled about it. I really enjoyed it. It's great when you can look out the window and you see your friend over there.
It must feel very empty now when you're up in the sky by yourself and nobody's around you.
Yeah, it makes a big difference if there's just a random plane out there, or if you're talking to each other and you see each other and you have eye contact and you know you're doing the same thing and you're watching each other's movements very closely.
Yeah, when you went into that cloud where you lost Mal, and I believe it was the same scene where you were following the cliffs below, and you went into IFR conditions, and you're a VFR pilot, and you talked about how you weren't trained for that. And I was a little surprised. Well, one thing I did notice, and I thought was great, and I guess this is a pilot's eye noticing it, you went right to your training. You tried to keep the altitude steady. You watched your instruments. To me, that was great that you fell back on your training when you got into that situation. Quite honestly, I was a little surprised that they were leading VFR pilot into IFR conditions. Were the other pilots IFR rated, or just you were the only VFR pilot?
Two of the other pilots were IFR rated. I think that one other guy was also just VFR. But yeah, I've heard that a lot from other people. You know, some people write me really outraged emails like, how could you do that? You know, and I have to say, you know, for the sake of the movie, there's some part of me that, of course, I dramatize the situation a little bit more, because you want your movie, you know, you want to create a little drama in your film. None of what I said was untrue, but it was just I tried to make it seem a little more dramatic than it was. The other thing that I want to say is that, you know, I really don't blame Mal in any way, and I don't want it to appear like he led us into this and he shouldn't have. I mean, first of all, the ultimate responsibility lies with me. I could have said at any point, I'm not doing this.
Right, of course.
Yeah, you know, I'm the pilot in command. I have to make that decision, and I made that decision. Also, specifically to that situation of flying down the coast when we went into the clouds, we knew this was like how many hundreds of miles long this cliff was, and we knew there was not any other terrain there. And like Mal said, there's probably not too many other planes out there.
Right.
Very unlikely. So knowing that there wasn't going to be anything in the way, there wasn't going to be suddenly an antenna or a mountain or something, made it less scary to me. And knowing that I was talking to all the other guys at the same time, and imagine we were like a pearl chain, like we were all strung along this cliff, and we had the GPS, so we would talk to each other, and I knew where they were. I knew that they were at like 17.5 miles, and the other guys was at 18.3 miles, and so, and we made sure we weren't at the same, one was over the cliff, one was inland of the cliff, one was outside of the cliff, so we kind of knew where we were of each other. And I also would know that the guy in front of me would say, I'm now at 18.3 miles, and I just came out of the cloud. So I knew where the beginning and end of the cloud right. was. So that all of that made it more, I guess, less scary and more doable.
Well, it sounds like you guys obviously had a plan. You were in constant communication. So it wasn't as you said, dramatic as you said in the movie. But I have to tell you one thing. You did a really great job because both my wife and I were sitting on the edge of our seats waiting for you to get out of those clouds. It was great.
Good, good, good. I mean, what was frankly, I mean, the landing that follows right after that with the crosswind, that really was something else.
Oh, my God. I forget who was the last plane coming in that I think...
It was Jerry's plane, yeah.
Who was it?
Oh, that was Jerry's plane.
Right, I think you were saying it or your father was saying it. He said, like, straining out, Jerry, straining out the plane. And I'm, like, inching forward and I'm saying, kick the rudder, kick the rudder. And he made a great landing. And you did, too.
He really did. He really did. And if I would have had to do that landing on day two... I would have freaked out, and I would have maybe lost my cool. But by that point, I was feeling pretty confident, and like I told you earlier, I felt sort of like more in tune with my plane, and I got actually extremely calm in that moment, and just like, we have all the time in the world, I'm just going to feel this plane where it is and feel the wind and just put it down, and it was fine, and I... Very often now when I fly in L.A. and it gets bumpy or windy, and it's funny, I remember back to that landing, and I get very calm and very focused.
Well, it builds confidence. Like I said earlier, you know, you've gone through so many different experiences that you know that most pilots have never gone through or will never go through, and you gain the experience and you know, the trust in your abilities by doing all that. The one scene where, when you came out of the clouds, you said you found a runway and you just landed there. Were you intended to land at that runway, or was that just the first runway you saw?
You mean when we landed in Proserpine? When I said I saw a runway and I just decided to land here?
And everybody else found it, and you were happy to see that.
That ended up being the one that we had been told to go to, but I had no idea if it was. I just saw a runway, and it's like, I'm landing here. I'm not going any further.
Again, training took over, right? You're in a situation, find the closest place to land.
Right, exactly. And I figure out where I am once I'm on the ground. But it turned out that the other guys came to the same place, so I guess I had found the right one then.
I really, truly enjoyed the movie, and I think it was very well done, and I can't say anything more about it. Very well done, and I'm telling everybody about it. You know, even on AmVenture.org, in one of the forums, they were asking for movies to show at Oshkosh, and I said, you got to show about Flyabout, you know.
Oh, you did? Okay, thank you. Yeah, you know, I think, I don't know, it kind of becomes obvious when you see the film, but it was a one-woman operation production from, you said earlier, I did it all by myself, the writing and editing and so forth and directing, and I'm also the only one distributing it and marketing it, so... Any word of mouth I can get is great for me, and so far that's all I've had in terms of help, and it's been so wonderful to see how the film has taken off, and I get orders from all over the world. I've sent it to 24 different countries already.
Fantastic. Have you ever listened to Plain Crazy Down Under? It is actually a podcast out of Australia.
Oh, really? No, I haven't heard of that.
Well, I'm going to be shooting them a tweet or an email to say, guys, you got to check out this film. You know, it would be interesting to hear their perspective on your movie, you know, being pilots from Australia.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, absolutely. Please do. And that would be great.
So before I let you go, taking a cue or inspiration from Dave and Will, you know, I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask you as part of the podcast. What do you most enjoy about flying?
That I can do it.
I tell you, when I look up at a plane and it's flying over, I say, you know what? I can do that.
Yeah, it's a thrill to just be like, I can't, you know, I'm doing it. It's great.
Next question. What do you want to do next in your flying endeavors?
As I told you, I want to take my daughter and my son flying. I would like to find the time and make the time to fly more regularly again. I didn't fly for about 6 years after Australia because I had kids, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm now, my next goal is just to become more regular again and to grow more confident again and fly more often. And eventually I would like to fly an ultralight. I would like to fly a tail dragger.
Oh, definitely.
Those are some of my goals. And I would like to get an IFR license eventually, but when I have more time.
Okay, final question. How has flying changed you?
I think it has made me a calmer person. That might sound counterintuitive, but I think it's actually, you know, nowadays when I go on a Wednesday morning, I drop the kids off at school and I just sneak out to the airport and I take the plane out all by myself and take it up and fly over Pasadena and do a couple of landings, and then I drive home and I find myself extremely calm and relaxed. And I think it's because when you're in the plane, you have to be so focused and so concentrated on that there's no room to think about anything else but the fact that you're flying this airplane. And so it's like a little bit like pressing the reset button on daily life. And it really, when I'm really stressed out and I have a lot going on and to think about, then when I go flying, it's like going to church. It makes me really calm and relaxed.
You know, I definitely can relate to that. Like you said, when you're flying, there's nothing else but that. And it really makes you focus on the task at hand and forget about everything else that's going on. All your problems, all your cares, all the little things just seem to disappear. And my wife is always constantly telling me to go flying because she says when I come back from flying, I am so happy and so relaxed and so calm that she encourages me to go. She sees the change. And I think that's what most of us get out of this. It's just, you know, it's our connection. Like you said, it's like going to church. It's like going on a walkabout.
Yeah, definitely.
Monica, well, I really, really appreciate you taking your time out to talk to me. And like I said, really enjoyed the film. And I'm definitely going to, by word of mouth, try to get other people to watch it. And hopefully I'll see you at Oshkosh or at least watch the movie at Oshkosh again this year.
Can plug this in at the end here. If anybody wants to find out more about the film, you can do it at my website at www.flyaboutmovie.com.
And they can purchase a DVD through your website, correct?
Correct, yeah. Right on the website, there's a trailer and there's some more information, and there's also a place to buy the DVD right there.
Any shout-outs you would like to give?
Well, I guess I'll shout-out to Will and Dave, who put you onto me.
Yes.
They're great guys, and the Bonanzas to Oshkosh, for sure. And Linda Meeks of the Girls with Wings. And the 99s. I see a whole bunch of people, but I think we'll leave it at that.
Right. And I'm going to try to take my daughter up flying on March 8th. You have inspired me.
Oh, good. You should. Excellent. And you know what? Then go. I can't tell you the website off the top of my head. I think it's called Centennial of Women Pilots or something like that.
Okay. You know what? I'll Google that and I'll put a link on my show notes to that. And we'll try to get more women up in the air.
You're supposed to register beforehand so they know who's all going, and then you get a certificate that you've contributed to the world record.
Try to get my 16-year-old daughter to make some time for her old father, and maybe we can go flying.
Excellent. Okay, great. Do that.
All right, Monica, I really appreciate you taking your time, and enjoy the weekend. Hopefully I'll be seeing you in Oshkosh or talking to you soon, or maybe hopefully our paths will cross one day.
Yes, absolutely. I look forward to it.
Hi, I'm Will.
And I'm David.
And we're two of the voices in your head.
Come join us in the virtual hangar for a little good old-fashioned hangar flying.
Well, it's not really old-fashioned.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, it's a Skype-based virtual hangar that only exists on the internet.
But we got beer.
That is true.
And we never know who we might run into.
Yeah, I see that.
And I really did get stick time in that F-16.
Okay, you win. Come join us for some good old-fashioned hangar flying.
Look for the Pilot's Flight Podlog in iTunes.
Or visit us at pilotsflightpodlog.com.
My first shout-out goes out to Monica Petrillo. I really appreciate her taking her time out of her busy life to talk to little old me. Please visit her website, flyaboutmovie.com. There you can see the trailer, read the reviews, and more importantly, purchase the DVD. You can also follow Monica on Twitter as Flyabout. I'd like to give another shout out to Will and Dave of the Pilot's Flight Podlog. I first heard about Monica on episode 54 of their podcast. After listening to the interview with Monica, it inspired me to go out and purchase her DVD. I would also like to give a shout out to Dave Crawford, who graciously helped me test my Skype connection and recording of the Skype call in preparation for the interview with Monica. I plan on having Dave on the podcast really soon. He is a new pilot, a member of the Civil Air Patrol, and part of the FAA safety team. We'll have a lot of really interesting things to talk about. And my final shout-out goes out to Plane Crazy Down Under, an aviation-based podcast with a focus on the Asia-Pacific area. Steve and Grant are your hosts, and they bring Aussie humor to the aviation podsphere. Plane Crazy Down Under is a hangar-flying podcast which appeals to all aviation enthusiasts around the world. Along with their commentary, Steve and Grant mixes in interviews with aviation experts. This is a great podcast, very funny, and it has now become one of the voices in my head, and I recommend that it becomes a voice in your head as well. You can download the podcast from iTunes or go to their website, planecrazydownunder.com. You can also follow them on Twitter as PCDU, Papa Charlie Delta Uniform. I would also like to thank them for the shout-out that they gave the new pilot podblog in episode 24, Misuse of Accents. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. Blue skies and tailwinds, everyone. You can get this podcast at iTunes, your favorite podcatcher, or go to thenewpilotpodblog.blogspot.com. You can reach me at thenewpilotpodblog@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/newpilotpodblog. The intro and closing song is John Mellencamp's My Aeroplane. Thank you everyone for listening, so now get out there and exercise your freedom to fly.